Quinnell, reel 13.
Another subject which I wanted to raise with you was the question of whether you had any special issues of clothes or other equipment while you're out there. I'm thinking particularly of things which you might have needed to counteract the conditions you found in the front line, like the mud and the water and like the temperatures as winter came on.
Yes. In the winter, every man was issued with a sheepskin coat or a goatskin. Now the sheepskins were the most popular, but they were the goatskins were more numerous, and so most of us wore the goatskin. And we found that if you got near a fire, even your best friends couldn't tell you what their opinion of you. We just stank to high heaven.
If you got near a fire,
yeah.
Why was it worse if you were near a fire?
The smell of the on the goatskin.
Yeah, but why was it worse when you were near a fire?
It seemed to bring the smell out of the skin.
Yes. Yeah. What about any special equipment for your feet?
Yes. The first in October in 1915, we lost several men through their feet becoming so swollen when they took their boots off. You see, their feet were immersed in water for days and days, 24 hours a day. And when they took their boots off, their feet used to swell up like balloons. So before going into the line, we had to take our boots, roll up our trousers legs, and soak our feet and our legs up to the knees in whale oil. It was horrible smelling stuff, but it did the trick, and we had no more trouble with trench feet. Mm-hmm. Then in November, we were issued with Wellington boots, but as time went on, the water got so bad in the trenches that the water came over the top of the Wellington boots, and the next thing we had issued were thigh boots, and they were very good indeed.
How high did the first issue of boots come?
Just up to the just below the knee. They were like ordinary Wellingtons like we know now. But the thigh boots came right up to here, and they were very good indeed. The only thing was about them that when the trenches were drying out, the water had been just evaporated or soaked into the earth, and the trenches now became, the floors of the trenches were just paved with liquid mud, and that became like glue. And as it dried out, so it became stodgier and stodgier. And I remember on one occasion, it got so bad that you had to literally pull your back leg out and fling it in front of you to move along the trench.
Mm-hmm. That's very interesting.
Now, we've talked a lot about general trench conditions, and I want to go on now and talk about some of your actual battle experiences.
Yeah.
And the first battle we're concerned with is the Battle of Loos in September 1915.
Yes.
And you'll remember you had to move from the trenches at Hoop Line up to Loos to take part in that battle.
Yes.
Perhaps we can start off just by describing how your battalion was organized and moved from Hoop Lines to the front of Loos.
Yeah. Shall I start now? On the afternoon of the 25th of September in 1915, we were taken out of the line at Hooplands, and a very interesting army communique was read to us stating that our troops had that morning broken through the German lines at Loos. We gave three cheers, and we were greatly excited because close handy some buses were drawn up, and we were told to get on these buses. And we had the one and only ride I had on a bus in France that afternoon, and we were taken down to a place about 15 miles behind the line at Loos, and there we debussed and had a forced march up to the battlefront at Loos. We were met by a sergeant of the Grenadier Guards in the village of Vermels, and he was the guide who was going to take us to our new position. The British troops that morning had taken the whole series of the of German trenches, the front line, support line, and the reserve line. And we were taken into the reserve line. But of course, the trenches were facing the wrong way. The fire step was facing the wrong way. So it meant a lot of digging. And then we
These trenches you took over were German trenches.
They were German trenches.
How did they compare with the British trenches?
They were very similar in construction, very similar. But of course, in this case, the fire step was facing the wrong way. So it meant digging new fire steps. There was no wire in the front of us, of course. So then there were wiring parties, there were patrol parties, and it was a very, very busy time.
Mm. Now, when you moved into the front line at Loos, you had the French troops on one flank.
Yes, our battalion was the right-hand battalion of the whole British Army. Yeah.
Could you give me your impressions of the French troops and what your relations were like with
them? Yes, there was a well. The Germans had dug a well in their reserve line, and we used to meet the French troops when we went for water with our petrol tins. We used to meet them there, and they were always asking for British cigarettes, and we used to swap our British cigarettes for their French wine because they had an issue of wine. And we found them very similar to our chaps, about the same age, and we were very friendly with them.
Did any differences between the British and the French troops strike you? In the way they did things, or in their equipment or uniform?
Well, they were interested in our rations, but unfortunately, for the first 7 days on the Loos front, we had nothing else but bully beef and biscuits. And for 7 days there, we had a tin of bully and four biscuits put in our hand, and that was your lot. This was until the Army Service Corps and so forth got organized behind the line, and then our rations became more normal. For instance, we would have the tea, sugar, milk, cheese, jam and stuff like that come up as well with the rations. And their conditions and their outlook on life was very similar to ours.
What about their equipment and uniform? Did that differ in any way?
By this time, all the French army were equipped with a grey uniform. As we were in khaki, so they were in grey.
Okay. Now, before you actually got involved in the operations at Loos, there was a period during which you had several jobs. You had to redig the trenches, you were saying.
Make fire steps in the trenches so they faced the right way as far as we were concerned. Mm-hmm. But there was, every night, there were patrols going out and covering parties and so forth, and we were probing to find where the Germans were, and they were probing to find where we were. And this went on for about 7 days.
Do you have any recollections of any particular patrols which you took part in?
Yes. I was in charge of a patrol, and we bumped into some Germans, but we flung bombs and ran back, and then they went and returned to their trenches, and the whole German line blazed into fire because it was dark, and they gave us about a rapid fire, and the whole of their front line was etched in flame. So we found out exactly where they were, where their front line was.
When you were redigging the German trenches, Was that a purely infantry operation, or did the engineers play a part in it?
Engineers didn't do any digging for us. We always did our own digging. The only thing the engineers did was come and lay some tapes out, and we had to dig our trenches to their tapes.
I see.
Oh, yes.
Fine. Now, at Luce, you had the experience again of going over the top. How were you loaded up this time when you actually went into action?
We went into action full pack. That was the last battle of the British troops went into the line with all their equipment. And after we'd been in the line a few days, the engineers taped out some new trenches, and we had to go out of the night time behind a covering party and with our entrenching tools dig down and make yourself some cover. Well, we had no picks and shovels there, and our little entrenching tools didn't make a very little impression on the chalk. You only had to go down 2 or 3 inches and you were on chalk, Lewis. And we found that if you got down 9 inches, that was as much as ever. And for the next day, as soon as it was daylight, for the next 15 hours, you had to lie on knobbly bits of chalk. And believe you me, that was most uncomfortable.
While you were here, did you have to resist any German attacks on your line?
Well, they were more or less probes. They weren't real attacks, they weren't general attacks, they were probes of a patrol to find out where we were. Mm-hmm. And we had several skirmishes with them, we exchanged bombs and we exchanged a bit of rapid fire. Mm-hmm.
Do you remember what anyone was like? Can you sort of describe one of these German attacks?
Yes, there was a German sap, and we bumped into that one night, and we had a bit of a melee there, and we lost a few men, and we killed a few Germans or wounded them, and that was that. But
I'd be very interested to hear your description of any German attacks that were made on you whilst you were in the line at Luce.
Yeah. After we'd been in the line at actually in front of the village of Luz, or the ruins of Luz, we were moved along the front line, mile and a half to 2 miles away north, as that was to our left, in front of a village called Hullock. Now, this at Hullock, the trenches, the Germans hadn't been rooted out of their trenches there. And the trenches, they hadn't been rooted out, and the both sides fought like wild cats over silly little bits of trench. You would have thought they were inlaid with diamonds, the way they fought. But one particular evening, just at dusk, one of the favourite times for attacking, we had the Germans bombarded our front line, and we knew an attack was coming. But we had orders not to open fire until we got the order. Well, in the dusk, we could see the Germans forming up in a fold of the ground. We could just see their heads and the bayonets of their rifles. Well, after a while, these Germans marched up to us in a column of four. And then a machine gun on our left opened up. So without waiting for any orders, everybody opened up rapid fire. I know I let go seven bullets, and the Germans just melted away. So I let the other three fly and then reloaded. But there was no more Germans coming over, so that was that. And then on another occasion, there was a spur of the German trenches, which had been probably an old communication trench, and we had orders to attack it. Well, without any artillery bombardment, we went over just a platoon, and we had a go for this trench, and there was only a very few Germans in it, and we took it. But even that bit of trench during the next week changed hands.
This German attack on your trench you were describing, how easy was it, did you find, to stop an attack over the top that was coming towards you under these conditions?
How easy?
How easy, yes. Did you ever have any doubts that they would reach your lines?
We didn't care if they did. We were always ready for a scrap.
Yeah.